It's the English Martial Arts Podcast Show.
How you doing? The Habbo radio station everyone loves.
I love them a lot.
Hello and welcome to the English Martial Arts Podcast Show. And in this episode, we're going to be talking to Graham Butcher. This is an interview done over Skype. So the audio may not be as good as it should be, but it's a very interesting interview. And Graham Butcher is one of the leading instructors in Stav. Now, Stav is a Viking martial art based on the runes, and Graham will be here to explain as much as he can about it to you, as well as answering a few questions. So, Graham, if you'd like to introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your art and yourself.
My name's Graham Butcher. I'm 59 years old, which I don't really like talking about my age too much, but I think you need to know that because it sort of shows how long I've been around. I've been into martial arts since I was a little teenager. I sort of discovered, you know, karate and whatever at about sort of 14, 15. In fact, I'm the generation that saw the great boom in martial arts in the 1970s when sort of Bruce Lee and then, you know, David Carradine did the sort of Bruce Lee Kung Fu series and everything like that. So I go right back to that period. And I've never actually sort of lost the interest since. And I've done all kinds of different martial arts when I was younger, including all the usual ones of, you know, Kung Fu, kickboxing, karate, whatever. And then about 25, 26 years ago, I met this chap called Ivar Hasjevold, who had just come back from Norway, where he'd been for 14 years. And he'd sort of grown up with a kind of family tradition of sort of body, mind, spirit training that was kind of the family education system. It's a lot more than just martial arts, but that was sort of part of it in a remote part of Norway where the family had lived for generations. He married a Japanese woman in Norway, which is a long story in itself. When she had a baby, was due to have their first child, she went back to her mother, which is a standard Japanese thing to do. And Ivar went out there to sort of, you know, be there for the birth and then stayed for another 14 years. And while he was there, he sort of discovered Japanese martial arts in Japan and sort of trained there. And he kind of realized that there was a sort of this family system had something to offer, but it never been really taught systematically. And as he learned sort of how to teach and, you know, practice martial arts in a systematic, traditional way, like they do in Japan, he kind of realized that the principles and the ideas and the concepts that he'd kind of been taught as a young man from his family could sort of form the basis of sort of, you know, modern martial arts training, but with this sort of traditional background. So he then came back to Europe and settled in back in Beverly, back very next door to where I live now, in the early 90s. I got to know him because he was featured in the magazine Martial Arts Illustrated, which was quite a sort of no hang on is that right yes I'm may have got the name of the magazine slightly wrong, but it was that sort of fairly high quality glossy magazines we used to have in those days before everything went on the internet, remember?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I read the article about him, quite a substantial article, and I thought, this is somebody who's got something interesting to offer. Wasn't sure whether it was the Japanese training or the European stuff. I didn't really know the difference of that. Well, I wasn't really sure what would be most interesting about him. He just knew he had a lot to teach, which he did. Became his student for 4 or 5 years while I was living here. Since then, I've sort of moved to Oxford, then to Somerset, and then fairly recently, I've sort of come back to the East Riding again.
Right.
And we kind of developed the sort of staff training between us. It is a fusion system in the sense that we're not going to pretend that, it's a sort of, well, people say, is it a Viking system? And we go, yeah, it's a Viking system. We go all over the place. We collect ideas. We'll trade them for you if you want. Otherwise, we'll just steal it. That's what Vikings did, and that's what we do.
Absolutely. I mean, all martial arts masters have stolen everything they can. That's how their systems became so good.
Well, of course they do. Yeah, and I mean, we've always been into that. I mean, Japan, Ivar, you know, learned from everybody he could in Japan.
Yeah.
Since I had a very varied background in martial arts before I met him, and then since then, I've kind of, you know, looked at working with the staff. Now, what do I teach? the basis of Starve is it literally means knowledge of the rune staves, which, you know, again, is a slightly, I mean, what's that got to do with martial arts? Well,
very esoteric sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the way I see it, having some knowledge of Chinese martial arts, that the runes and the runes have the same place in Northern European culture as the I Ching does in Chinese culture,
yes.
Very broadly speaking. So therefore, if the sort of Chinese want to base a, you know, a martial arts system on the I Ching and on the Pakua and then all kinds of sort of symbolic animals and the animals of the Japanese, of the Chinese zodiac and whatever,
yes.
Then, you know, you kind of think, oh, well, that's fine, that's an interesting basis for a martial art. And in many ways, the sort of Starve has got a very similar kind of basis, and the runes provide you with the stances or postures that we work with,
okay.
And then all kinds of associations that you can then kind of build on. You don't need them. I mean, they're only a way of seeing fundamental principles, but fundamental principles are very hard to access without some sort of key to kind of let you in to see them.
Of course, you need a thorough understanding of a system to be able to put the principles into action.
Exactly. But when you sort of have, before you kind of have that understanding, you need kind of keys that sort of open up the principles so you can recognise them. And once you recognise them, you don't need the key anymore because the door's already open. But then you have to kind of create a new key for somebody else to open their version of it. Mm. So, you know, that's really where it comes in.
Can I ask you a question, Graham?
Please do.
Yeah. How easy or hard was it for you to transition from Eastern to a Western martial arts style?
Well, it wasn't, how to put this exactly. In my case, we didn't really sort of see it particularly in those terms at the time. Now, this is, remember, going back to the early 90s. So there isn't really, I mean, you've got people like Terry Brown was sort of just written the English martial arts book and things like that. So there was a little bit of interest in sort of HEMA, but really it didn't exist. So we didn't really see it in those terms. Mm. I had very little knowledge of weapon training, something I'd done a lot of unarmed combat, but I'd never done any weapon training. So I was kind of learning that from scratch. And we started off working with the Jo and the Bokken because that's what Ivar had trained with in Japan. So that was completely new to me. The main point was we were learning to sort of work with the lines and cut with the lines, and also and then go through certain drills, which we would teach what we would call the five principles. Right. So it was all sort of new to me. So it wasn't exactly a transition in that sense. It was a whole new area of martial arts training.
Right. What are those five transitions, Graham?
Well, the five principles are really probably, if you like, the core of Starve in a way. The five principles basically say, and these are sort of found in Norse mythology, in the stories of Norse mythology, that there's five positions. There's a trail or slave principle, which basically, this is not my problem, I'm how do I get out of here?
Right.
The Kark principle, this is my space, how do I defend it? Asher or warrior principle, I'm responsible for keeping order, how do I control this person? The Jarl principle, I need to manage this situation, but I need an overview. Just because someone's trying to kill me doesn't mean I can't focus on the overview. And the Konya principle basically says, well, if it's serious enough, then I will risk my life to make this happen or stop something happening, but I'd rather not. And if it isn't serious enough, I'll go back to the trail principle and just walk away.
Right. I see you have names for these five principles. Are they gradings?
Not exactly. You could sort of base it on, you know, you begin only learning the trail stuff and then you only learn the Jarl stuff or Karl stuff and work your way up like that. We haven't done it that way because you've got, I mean, they're basically states of mind.
Yes.
So really, I mean, the principle is then applied with tactics, and the tactic for the, you know, for the trail principle often would be, I don't like the look of that person, I'm walking the other way.
Right.
I mean, you know, or it could be, you know, you're using an axe to sort of, you know, to stop an attack and then back it off.
Right.
I mean, it could be, you know, there could be two extremes on that.
Yeah.
But the essential, so every level of training, we start off with the simplest training with the staff. We'll go through five drills which reflect the five principles, and each drill kind of lays the foundation for the next one in the sense that the movements, you know,
that you learn for, on one level actually then provides the foundation for the next level, and it kind of builds up from there. And then you go on to a more advanced weapon system, but still working with the five principles each time.
So how many weapons... Sorry, Graham. How many weapons are there in your system?
We like... One of the things we... Basically, there's the sticks of about 3 to 4 different lengths is one way of looking at it.
Right.
So you have, you've got, you know, the staff spear length weapon, the sort of club, maybe a sword, but we would normally see it as an axe, middle length weapon, cudgel, which would be a one-handed stick, and then sort of the tine length, which would be a short stick, which could also be a knife or a dagger or whatever.
Yes.
So the idea is that rather than saying, you know, we need this particular weapon to be able to train, it's like, so long as I've got a stick, I can train and I can improvise a stick, because Starve isn't meant to be a system for using particular weapons, because if they're not available to you, then what do you do?
Absolutely. I mean, in our particular system, we have lots of stick weapons and bladed weapons. Mm-hmm. So really, the principles of our system is whatever's there, you can use.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched sort of some of your stuff on video, and I mean, it's very much like, it's not actually very dissimilar to what we do at all.
Right.
It's just that we tend to keep it a little bit, we keep it fairly stylized, because what we're looking at each time is to look at working with the principle. But then, you know, if you pick up, I mean, I could pick up a pole axe or a pike or whatever, or a bill hook, and then quickly, you know, use it according to the principles of staff.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's not a problem to do, but I prefer not to get myself locked into saying, well, I only use this weapon, because if you give me something else, I can't actually do anything.
Absolutely, yeah. The mark of a true martial artist, as you say, is being able to use anything that's there.
Mm. That's right, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that's why I was able to learn the system or perfect it in Japan with the Japanese weapons. But then when he came back here, I was then able to say, well, what would happen if I use the European-sized staff instead of a Joe? What happens if I, you know, if I make a training axe instead of a Bokken? And, you know, it was different, but the essential principles were the same. And we were able to sort of, and that's when it became much more European in that sense. Yeah.
So, Graham, you've probably done loads of your own research, because when people take up these martial arts, they like to read everything possible.
Mm.
In your own research, what did you find that you've added to your training for your personal self?
I mean, probably all kinds of things, but I mean, in sort of how my training sort of developed because of stuff I've read and discovered.
Yes.
I've got quite a reasonable... What I really try to do with the martial arts side is to sort of simplify as much as possible. So I think the process of simplification has been important. But a couple of things I've learned that have been really useful. One is the sort of the idea of the 80-20 principle, or the Pareto's law. Are you familiar with that?
I am, yes.
Yeah. So, and that's really basically, you know, 80% of the benefit comes from 20% of what you do.
Yes.
So when I'm teaching, I'm always trying to look for that 20% that really brings the maximum benefit when people train it, so rather than just loading more and more and more stuff onto people or doing more and more training of my own until you've got no time and no energy left.
Yes.
You get older, a bit selective.
Yeah.
I look for the simplest and most appropriate drills that will bring me the maximum benefit. And when I'm teaching other people, I do the same for them, in the sense I'm looking for the thing that will help them the most to develop.
Okay.
And then when they've got to that point, they do what they like with it. But, you know, that's simplification.
Absolutely.
Do you still hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you absolutely fine.
Yeah, the network's not great, apparently. the other thing that I regard as a bit of a revelation, which is a bit odd, but I found it really helpful, is that as a martial arts instructor, I mean, you feel some responsibility for teaching self-defense. I mean, it's a part of what you do rather than the whole thing. But, I mean, you feel some responsibility for making sure that you teach people self-defense.
Yes.
And obviously you'll get some people saying to you, well, you know, if you teach me some self-defense or give me some advice on self-defense, people will actually learn martial arts, but, you know, I want that.
Mm.
And something that sort of I've done training with, I did a Jeff Thompson's masterclass series a few years ago, which was very good. And I've trained with Mark McYoung as well, and various other people.
Good, but good, my very good teacher.
Lesson was actually getting having a peahen, or you know, a female peacock, live in our garden for a while, and realizing that although it's not a very bright creature, they have a really sophisticated way of being aware, keeping safe distance, only roosting when things are safe, and sort of taking drastic action if they get cornered or get really frightened.
Yes.
And I kind of make that the basis for teaching people the very first level of self-defense training, which kind of fits in with everything I've learned from people like Jeff Thompson and everything else. But it's kind of a very accessible way of sort of teaching people stuff without getting them into, you know, well, you need to learn a bit of martial arts to defend yourself. It's much more that actually it's just an attitude of mind. Even a really simple animal can sort of do that.
Absolutely. What I've found, yeah. Yeah. What I've found is that teaching awareness is a much more effective thing than teaching physical technique.
Sorry, you're breaking up there.
Oh, sorry. I said what I find is teaching awareness is a much better thing than teaching technique sometimes.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, yeah. Can you still hear me okay? I can't hear you very well.
I can hear you absolutely fine.
Oh, yeah. I think you're back again now. You must. Yeah.
Okay. Lovely.
Sorry, you were breaking up for a while. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So if you look around you, Graham, you see quite a big scene now for the Western martial arts.
Hmm.
What are your impressions of the current state of the Western martial arts and historical European martial arts community?
Well, I mean, there's some great people involved doing some really fascinating stuff. And I mean, I haven't been to fight camp last year, but I mean, I've been to fight camp several years. I'm going to the Art That Adorns You this next weekend and stuff. So, I mean, there's some great people doing some fascinating stuff. And I mean, they've done amazing research and whatever. My issues around it, where I sort of feel a bit peripheral on it, is there's a very wide, it's very, very fencing based and competition based. And I think that's, you know, fine as far as it goes. But I mean, it's become very sort of geared in that direction. And I think that's a bit of an unbalanced focus. There's not really enough interest in the genuine sort of principles of combat, which I think is a bit neglected. I also feel there's a little bit too much, emphasis on equipment and, you know, whether it be sort of swords, you know, safety equipment and all that sort of stuff, which, again, you kind of need if you want to do the sparring. But, again, I don't think you're learning the essentials from that.
Yes.
And then the last point is I don't think, again, there's enough emphasis on the essential principles of body mechanics, structure, working with the lines, and then being able to sort of manifest the kind of principles that we look at.
I agree with that because anything that is going to work needs to be practiced in a way that's realistic.
Mm.
And if you're more sport-oriented, then it doesn't always work like that because you're not worried about taking hits on this part as long as you can get a hit on the other person on that part.
Which in a real situation you couldn't afford to do.
Absolutely not.
And I think the other thing that bothers me is that the reason we don't really do sparring, apart from the fact we're too mean to buy the kit, etc., is, you know, to be honest, I mean, well, I will say that because it's probably true. But I mean, but
it's too bloody expensive.
Well, it is. And I think, again, you get dependent on it and it doesn't equip you for, you know, the unexpected situation when you're not wearing it. But more fundamentally, and I was going back to what I was saying about the five principles, is that if you're having sparring, it's basically a kind of safe dueling. And the assumption is that it's to some degree or other a fair fight. But in real life, if two people are in conflict, they don't have the same objectives. So if your objective is to rob me and my objective is to not be robbed, then that's not a competition. That's me avoiding you doing something to me or vice versa. If I'm defending space, my defense of the space is a very different thing to your attempting to attack the space.
That's it.
Whoever it is. And therefore, when we're training for that sort of thing, you know, if you do have this training, and I think this is one of the big problems with martial arts of all kinds, whether Western or Eastern, is that there's so much emphasis on sparring and fighting that when people get into a situation, they think, oh, I now need to fight. Well, no, you don't.
No.
You need to decide what your priority is here and then do what it takes to fulfill that priority. And it might just be just close the door and lock it, might be the same.
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely. I mean, I still do, but I worked on the doors, and I find that talk is a much better weapon than actually getting physical, because if you get physical, there's so many factors that then come into it. Their friends, you know, the police, yeah. everything. But if you can talk to someone and get them to see sense, it's much more effective.
Exactly. And having that, but if you know that if it does go pear shaped, you can handle yourself, then you can have that conversation. But, you know, I always tell people my first, you know, rule of self defense is if it's got to the point where you're hitting somebody, something's gone seriously wrong.
Absolutely.
You know, and I mean seriously wrong, because, you know, if you're a teenager and you get into a scrap, it probably doesn't matter.
No.
But when you're a grown man, you know, you've got to take responsibility for these things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you see, Graham, what do you see as the what do you see as the future for Starv?
Sorry, I didn't get that. You're breaking up again.
Okay. What do you see as the future for Starv?
What do I see the future of it as?
Yes.
Well, I've got a reasonable sort of following, and I'd sort of like to sort of build that up. I've been doing more work with the sort of more esoteric side of things, with the sort of mythology and the sort of more cultural aspects.
Right.
And there's quite a lot of people interested in that. And they'll often do a bit of martial arts as part of it. But I'm getting quite a lot of feedback to say that people want to explore more of that side of things. And I'm sort of developing means of teaching that. As far as the sort of the martial arts side is concerned, I think there's still two things that we can kind of offer. I mean, one is that if people want to get into Starv and, you know, learn the stances and then learn the drills that we use for training and the terminology we use and everything, then that's great. And quite a lot of people do like that. What we also have to offer is the fact that we can teach essential principles of martial arts training and sort of structure, and say what we're working with the lines of the web, so you actually sort of the some lines that are effective and some lines that aren't, and that's something that is more if takes quite a bit of learning. Also the idea of action, intention and movement, that really all martial arts techniques and applications can be analyzed according to what's your intention and how do you express that between action and movement.
Right.
And that's, it sounds really obvious, and yet I see an awful lot of people who can't really do that. You know, they put a lot of emphasis into hitting, but they don't when they really should be moving, or vice versa.
Absolutely.
And the third thing is also getting people to understand the five principles. I mean, you have to call it the names we use, call it whatever you like. But again, if you're into dealing with combat situations, you know, we can sort of teach you how to use those principles, and then you can incorporate those into your own training. And that's, again, I think something that would be really useful. So I'd like to see, I mean, I have had some opportunities to share this stuff, but, you know, I think it'd be nice to have more.
So it's a lifestyle, really? So it's a lifestyle rather than just a hobby of martial arts?
Yes, I would say that. I mean, again, it's kind of different degrees of it, because I mean, Ivar is Scandinavian Norwegian. He's got quite a lot of students in sort of Sweden and Denmark, and I've been over there and sort of trained with them and sort of taught them. But they see it as very much connecting them with their history and their culture and their ancestors almost. And yet, as an English person, you know, it's kind of, I don't have that same connection to it. So it's more of a way of life, a philosophy of life. But, you know, it still means a lot to me. But I wouldn't pretend, you know, it doesn't make me a Scandinavian, you know, because I do it.
Of course not, no.
Yeah, no.
So for the last question, Graham, do you see Starv as being part of the HEMA community or something completely separate?
That's really for other people to judge, isn't it, in a sense, you know. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, we do what we do, and I'm happy to train with anybody. It is a bit different because there does seem to be this thing about HEMA that it has to be reconstructed. And, you know, if it isn't reconstructed because you've actually got a living tradition, then, you know, it isn't doesn't really quite count as HEMA. I'm quite sure where that idea has come from, but it seems to be the definition these days. And, yes, we don't really fit in with that. I think the other problem, funny thing, that what HEMA is also doing is, I mean, again, I've been around martial arts for, you know, 45 years now. And when I was a, you know, teenager and 20s, I mean, if you trained in one style and one school, teachers tended to get very kind of defensive about you training with other people and, yes. You know, our style's the only one that works. And if you go and train with them, well, we don't want to talk to you anymore and this sort of stuff. Yeah. And it all got quite, it used to get quite unpleasant sometimes. Then you had a period where it was like, oh, all martial arts are the same, so we just mix and match everything. Mm-hmm. And now it's got a stage where people are in the, you know, they're very conscious of their heritage and the martial art they work with, but they're also saying, well, of course, we're not very good at grappling, so go and do a bit of BJJ, or we're not very good at kicking, so you might like to try a couple, you know, do trainers with a, you know, Taekwondo or whatever it is, or one much good at weapons, so go and do some stuff, you know, I mean, we get that.
Yes.
So in the general martial arts community, you know, I find that, you know, people are happy to accept style what it is, and if we can give them something great, and if they can share something, that's great.
Yes.
And HEMA seems to be through a period, which I hope won't last very long, of being very purist about, well, you know, it's all in the old books. It's almost quite funny as a Christian and a sort of someone with a background in theology. It's quite fun being a martial artist. Martial arts also keen on, you know, the books and the truth is all there in the books and how the one is. Yeah, I find that rather funny because, you know, the church has sort of been a lot more open-minded about textual stuff than the martial arts community.
Yeah.
And the thing is that I think that sort of HEMA is going through this period of it being very purist, and we kind of refuse to fit into that. We're a Viking system. We go anywhere. We'll learn from anybody. We'll share with anybody. We'll trade with anybody. We'll steal from anybody. And therefore, I think that I'd like to think I enjoy training in a HEMA environment, and I've got some very good friends who do it, and I work with them, and I'm very happy to share what I know in that context, but I've got this feeling that this rather purist sort of element of it isn't kind of too well disposed to us sometimes. But when I get to know people personally and talk to them personally, even if they're not at all sure about staff, once they've got to know me and work with me a bit, they're usually fine. You know?
Yeah. Absolutely. It takes someone to know you properly before they can make a proper judgment about you and what you do.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to ask you a question, actually, because, I mean...
Yeah, go ahead.
How did you form... I mean, you've been very kindly having this conversation now. I hope that we can sort of meet and get to know each other sometime.
That would be great.
But, I mean, you did sort of... you've had a kind of rather, shall we say, a negative sort of view of staff. I wonder what formed that. I'd be quite curious to know how you formed that judgment.
Well, years and years ago, I used to do jiu-jitsu.
All right.
And when staff first came out, it looked like jiu-jitsu being called a different name.
Mm.
But now I know different.
Yeah.
So I've changed my mind.
Yeah. Okay.
And the thing about it was, is because jiu-jitsu was such a system that went back hundreds and hundreds of years, and I was doing jiu-jitsu, I felt a bit miffed that someone was taking something I do and calling it something else.
Mm.
But over the years, now I'm talking about the, I don't know, maybe the early 90s maybe, and since then I've learnt a lot more about a lot more, and now I know. I don't hold that view anymore.
Yeah. We've never sort of denied the lineage, the, how it, you know, developed, and the fact that Ivar needed to get that training in, you know, those Japanese arts to get it right.
Yeah.
And, you know, so in a way your observation was quite correct in a sense, but it was, you know, I see that's fair enough. That sort of explains why you felt the way you did about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like to think we've done something with that knowledge that's special and unique, and we're not just pretending to do one thing, we're really doing something else.
Listen, yes. Absolutely. I feel that arts like Starve and a lot of things like that, they're original mixed martial arts systems.
Yeah. Hmm.
Because they do take a lot of really good stuff, mix it together, and make it their own.
You're breaking up again. I'm not hearing that very clearly.
I said, what I think that arts like Starve... They take things, they mix them up, they make them their own, and they turn them into really good martial systems.
Yeah, well, that's what I think we've done. I hope so, anyway. Yeah.
And the thing about Starve is, as well, it's got a good theory behind it.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's what makes a martial art sometimes. You can't just have the physical. You have to have the theory and the thought behind why you're doing these things.
Yeah. I mean, I always take the attitude, it's not, I mean, you know, there's a lot of teachers who are physically very, very good at what they do, but I mean, that's fine. They're great, you know, at showing other people stuff and doing stuff, but they don't necessarily help other people to develop as
absolutely
martial artists
not.
Because, you know, all they're doing is showing how clever they are.
Yes.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's very hard to be a teacher sometimes.
It's a challenge.
You have to learn to be a teacher. And there's certain aspects, and you have to have patience, etc., because some people learn at different speeds to others, and it's a very difficult situation sometimes to find yourself in. I'm sure you found that as a teacher.
Do you find though that the people who can come in who are sort of very athletic and can learn really fast are actually the most difficult ones to teach, because they'll kind of imitate what you do quickly and then they just get bored?
Yes. Whereas not only that, Graham, I get people coming in that already think they know everything.
Yeah, whereas the people who actually have to struggle with it at the beginning are the ones who actually get the furthest, because they develop the dedication and the focus to keep going. Yeah.
Absolutely. They become the teachers.
Yeah. And they do, don't they? Yeah.
They do, yes. Very much so.
Mm.
Okay, Graham.
Okay.
Right, that was brilliant. Thank you very much for taking the time to for the interview, for the podcast. And I really, really appreciate it. And hopefully one day we can meet up and do some training together.
Yeah, we must do that. Yeah. Well, I'm really grateful to you for the opportunity. Thanks very
much. Worries.
Yeah.
No worries, okay. Graham. Anytime.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Graham.
Thank you.
See ya.
See you. Bye.
Listen to us, because we listen to you.